Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 98, Anna Hill. Anna is a CPA with an advanced degree, also an e-commerce seller. And I think that that combination is so specialized and so special in our business and very rare to find and very valuable. She has a group, Accounting We Will Go, and we talk about that later on in the podcast. But the plain speak, she has an ability to talk in language that us average people can understand. And I just think it's such a great, great talent that she has, and a passion, I would say. So this segment, we talk about how an accountant gets into the e-commerce business, and I think it's pretty interesting. Let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. Man, and tonight's guest, I'm excited. You know, what happens, there must be a joke in there when you get a room full of accountants. You know, how many does it take to, I don't know, I got nothing. I'm not very funny. I guess that's the accounting way, all right? Anna Hill, welcome, Anna.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad to have you on. You know, as a little bit in the pre-show, we were talking, and what I'm interested in is foundations. I still believe that so many people are just, you know, getting by. They have no clue what their sales really are, or more importantly, they have no clue what their profits really are. And sometimes chasing sales is not a good idea. You can chase profits, and that's a better idea because you probably are selling enough, but you could enhance that, those sales and make a lot more money for a lot less effort. So I know you're the person, you are the expert, and you've been on the tour talking about it, and I just think it's so smart, and so I'm very excited to have you on. Plus, you know, I'm intrigued to find out how a public accountant, why a public accountant would get into entrepreneurship. Now, in fairness, many of them have their own practice, so that's entrepreneurship, right? In today's day and age, a public accountant has to go and get clients. They don't just come knocking on the door very often, right? Yes. So I'm intrigued to find out how you get into this kind of e-commerce. So let's start back. College graduate, advanced college graduate. Were you selling your textbooks or anything while you were in school?
Well, I did sell my textbooks, but it was more to just, you know, fund my living and rent and food as opposed to trying to flip them to make money. You know, you buy the books and at the end of the semester, you sell them back. I had no idea until probably about 3 years ago that there was this other industry where people buy and sell and actually make the money. So,
Now, they're expensive books. Accounting books are expensive, especially at the graduate level. They're very expensive, and they never change, right? Hardly ever, right? Mm-hmm. And so, so they, you know, when you're spending that kind of money and you get, what, 28% back or 40% back?
Yeah.
Or whatever. Were your parents entrepreneur? I mean, I'm trying to understand. Did you see something earlier on in your life that you sparked an interest? Did you think you would run your own business when you were going to school?
You know, when I first went to college, I was kind of a blank slate and I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And I literally changed majors about five times.
Were they all math related though?
No. I started off, I was a communications major. I wanted to be on TV. Woo, it's going to be so fun. I get paid to talk. And then I changed to Russian. I thought that would be really cool. I grew up in Washington, D.C., and I graduated from high school in 1988. And you might remember that was sort of, you know, the Reagan and the Soviet Union and all of that.
Tear down that wall, yeah.
Exactly. Right. So I kind of got Russia fever. And then after about a year and a half, it got really hard. And I thought, you know, I can't do this. And so I got into the business school and eventually evolved into accounting. And I liked it because it was a puzzle. And you have to figure out the answers from bits and pieces. And that's actually what I really love about accounting, is solving problems and figuring out what the answer is. And so I got into accounting that way. There wasn't an entrepreneurial background that said, I'm going to do accounting and then I'm going to start my own business. I just literally finished with an accounting degree and took it from there.
Interesting. See, for me, it was the easiest degree to get. Somebody said, hey, if you get an accounting degree, it's the least amount of credits you have to get. I'm like, oh, I like that. But I actually took high school accounting. And it's funny, in my high school, we actually had accounting as a curriculum, like a track.
Oh, well, that's neat.
Yeah. Yeah, it was neat because that's pretty much what managerial accounting really is anymore. It's really high school level. I always tell people that we're doing the stuff I remember learning in high school at this point because we have a tax department. I don't do tax anymore. I have no clue. I don't do depreciation. I haven't done it in years because we have a tax department that handles all that kind of stuff, you know. And when you're working in corporate America, it's very specialized. Do you work in a particular field, or what's your track that you're on?
Well, when I first started, I was in industry. So I worked in an accounting department for a construction firm. And then I eventually got into forensic accounting, which I really, really loved. And we did work for law firms. So all of our clients were lawyers and law firms, and we helped with complex business litigation. And it was great. It was actually my favorite accounting job. The problem.
So you were like a sleuth.
Yeah,
going
exactly.
Back through, right? And that's that statistics degree. She has an advanced statistic. I can't even say it. And so that's that sleuth in you, right? That's really interesting. I mean, you really do peel back those numbers, and eventually you can figure out, wait a second, this doesn't add up. Something is in here, right?
Exactly, where you might say, okay, this is the population of transactions. How many do I need to select? What is the appropriate sample size to give me a good indication of what is or isn't going on? So it was really a neat way to apply math and statistics to, you know, complex legal problems. And I loved it. It was a lot of fun. The problem was it was really stressful and it was very deadline driven. The court does not play when it comes to a deadline. If they set a court date, that's when it's going to happen. And, you know, when you're raising a young family, you can't really be working on Sundays till 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. It's just not an option. So I had to leave a job I love, but what I love more is having a good work-life balance. So then I went into private practice and I did that for about probably 8 or 10 years after that. And
oh, wow.
I really enjoyed that.
And that was just you?
It was me. No, actually I worked for a couple of small firms. And
oh, okay.
There were smaller CPA firms and, you know, we were responsible for bringing clients, but we would also help each other. And I enjoyed that. Like you, taxes aren't my favorite. I think, and I tell people this all the time, it's a very specialized niche. I think, you know, people have this misconception that all CPAs, all accountants do taxes. They don't.
Nope.
Those are the ones that we know about and hear about, but there are so many other things that CPAs do that it's not just that. As a matter of fact, I don't do my own taxes because I want someone who's taken the continuing professional education classes that knows exactly what's going on minute by minute with the IRS and the regulations and the changes. And I really don't want to keep up with that. So I'd rather outsource that.
Well, if people don't understand, it's so specialized, right? And as you say,
it
the
is.
CPAs, you have to have so many for tax. When I took tax accounting years ago, I had the same degree you have. I have no clue. You know, I mean, unless you practice it and practice it and practice it and you see it in practice and keep
right.
up with the laws as they change and really spend time with it, you really don't get it because it is so peculiar. And I'm sure it's done by design, that peculiarity, because just to keep people employed. But it really is. And you're doing yourself no favor by doing it yourself just to save. I think our taxes are about $1,000 a year.
Yep.
But that includes a lot. I mean, it mm-hmm. includes our personal time. I mean, it includes a lot. And so you sit back and you say for that, and they'll go and defend it. I'm okay with that, you know.
I agree.
Yeah. Okay, so you did some private practice work. Did you achieve that life-work balance that you were talking about? Because sometimes in a small firm, it's all hands on deck too.
Well, that's true. And I did achieve it only because I insisted on working part-time and
okay.
I never wanted to get to the point where I was literally working, you know, 60, 70 hours a week. So I said, you know, I'll work these days, these hours. And obviously if there was some extra help needed, I would pitch in, but I became sort of my own employee and I contracted myself out because I knew CPAs in the area. And so I was kind of the CPA. If they needed help with a certain, you know, tax matter, I did a lot of work with tax disputes, which is, you know, is completely different than doing a tax return. Mm-hmm. And there is a little bit of a forensic accounting element to that. So I created this niche where I was working with CPAs I knew, helping them with certain projects and engagements, and they would have a beginning and an end. And then that was that. And if I wanted to take a break, I would. And if I wanted to pick up more work, I could do that too.
Well, and the beauty is, if you didn't want to work for them, you chose not to. So you could fire them as opposed to them firing you only, right?
Exactly.
And so I like that. I've heard that you know, if you have 10 customers, you choose, you don't like that one. Okay, I still have 9, and then I can just replace that one. Rather than working for one company, and if you don't like working for them, you're kind of stuck, you know, especially in the job that you're in, right? You know, it's hard to find, as you work your way up in a company, you know, it is all about the time there, right? And you mm-hmm. just move up, and you've got to start over again. And that's a long time. I've never was attracted to it because of the hours. It's not that I'm afraid of hard work.
Right.
I didn't want the hours or the travel that's mm-hmm. involved with it. Did you run into a lot of travel, or is it because you're in the Atlanta area, there's so many businesses there, your travel would be regional?
No, I did a ton of travel. I can remember, especially when I was doing forensic accounting, I can remember waking up in a hotel room, not exactly remembering what city I was in. I'm like, okay,
oh, no.
I think I know where I am. And it's really a bizarre thing to say that, but you're this road warrior. And, you know, you leave on Monday, you get home on Friday, and it's just exhausting. And I think I did I think it was a positive thing for my career in general because I got to do that, but it was not sustainable for the long run.
Yeah, it's a good experience. It builds character and it shows you what you don't want to do. I think that's where a lot of accountants do tend to fade because they say, woo. But then ones who make it through, I mean, you know, God bless them. They can make a lot of money and have a lot of responsibility. But boy, that does take a toll on you.
Yes, it does.
Okay, so we've gotten you now working kind of on your own business, right, with your 1099 employee or a contract
right.
employee, and doing what you wanted to do around your hours, around children. And so were you working out of your house generally?
I was working out of my house, but sometimes I would go to a client's office, which the client was the CPA, and sometimes we would go see their client. But I think that's where I got the bug to really do my own thing. Once I saw the flexibility and the possibilities and the freedom. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, wow, this is great. I really want to continue to do my own thing. And, you know, accountants tend to be really conservative and they tend to be routine oriented. So when I realized that I could do my own thing my own way, I was kind of proud of myself. I thought, this is great. I want to keep doing this. What else can I do? How else can I make this even better?
I love it. And I think your point is, you didn't do it for the money. You weren't saying, hey, I can make more money. You were saying, I got some freedom because I can kind of ebb and flow as I want to ebb and flow, mm-hmm. right? Vacations actually happen, right, as opposed to talking about it, right?
Right.
I mean, those things are important. And I think, you know, one of the big issues that I see in the e-commerce business right now is people are just killing themselves pretty much 7 days a week. That mm-hmm. does get old. Right. There is a time for that.
Right.
Okay. So you decided what at that point?
How did you
see 3 years ago? Was it your husband's collection that you saw or what was it? I've heard about this. I saw pictures.
Well, it was a combination of a couple of things, but I think I got so addicted to the freedom, I wanted a big break. So I took the summer off and then that morphed into fall. And then my husband has an action figure collection, as you know, and it takes up an entire room in our home. Completely out of control, but we love it. And we were moving, and there were a few figures that he wanted to get rid of, and we thought about selling them on eBay, and then we sort of learned about selling on Amazon. And I realized then how easy it is to sell things on Amazon. And it's not easy to sell on Amazon, but when I say easy, how nice it is to not have to hold your own inventory. And I really think that for people who have gone from eBay to Amazon, that's how the switch gets flipped. They say, I no longer have to hold my own inventory. This is freeing.
Because it is most people that I have found are afraid of Amazon's FBA because they're very controlled. They ship the right way. They make sure their packages, they don't, you know, because let's face it, it gets beat up in the mail. So you learn over time, hey, I got to do this, I got to do that. And then when you say, wait, I'm going to give it to somebody, oh no, they can't do it. But as you're saying, once you get that first little, it's like, ooh, I didn't have to take a picture. I didn't have to do this. I didn't have to do that. And it's gone.
Right.
I like this, right?
Exactly.
So that happened for you. That was a moment.
That was a huge moment. And about that same time, there was something else that happened that made all the pieces fall together. Do you remember in early 2014 when Frozen was all of the rage?
Mm-hmm.
And that was when I started. And I remember someone said to me, go get frozen Valentine's. And I thought, how can you ship in something that's frozen, which is, you know, ridiculous. But that's kind of how naive I was. But then I learned what they were talking about. And because I live in Atlanta, I could go to 10 zillion Targets in one day. We have several Disney stores, and I could go buy all of this stuff. And I thought, this is really fun. And I've heard this before, and it sounds kind of terrible, but there's almost an addictive element when you find that item that you know that you can sell for a good bit of money and your heart starts racing. And I was doing that day in and day out. And I thought, this is 1,000 times more fun than accounting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a rush. I mean, it is. And how long did that RA thrill last?
Well, it lasted until Frozen kind of. Well, actually, until once the supply caught up with the demand.
Mm-hmm.
Then I realized this isn't really a sustainable long-term business model. And it was funny because I remember reading posts in a couple of groups where people said, all these newbies who are selling frozen, when it dries up, they're going to realize this is hard work. And I kind of poo-pooed it. Oh, no, they don't know what they're talking about. Well, you know what? They were
right.
This
is easy. Yeah.
Yeah, they were right. But at the time, I was just in this bliss of Elsa and Anna, and I just, oh, this is so great. I love every single thing about this. Easy money. So...
And this is stuff you're buying for $10 and selling for $59, right? Because you couldn't find most of the stuff once that before the supply got caught up.
Right.
I mean, you could charge a premium. I mean, a real premium. You got in at the right frenzy, right? You saw the crazy prices.
Oh, exactly. It was great. And I would go, they had these little Beanie Babies, and I would do these little sets of four. And it was so fun to find, oh my gosh, I found the moose or whatever he was to complete the set of four. And they were so cute, and it was really fun. So I thought it was easy, but then when the supply caught up with the demand and the frenzy kind of died down, I kind of stepped back and I caught my breath and I thought, what in the world is this? This is a really incredible business opportunity. And then I started thinking about everything from the accounting perspective. And it's not that I wasn't keeping up with my accounting, because I'm neurotic like that, but I realized that there was this huge gap. And nobody was talking about accounting except for how do we do it? I don't know what to do. Here's this class. Here's this spreadsheet you can buy. But I didn't notice a repository of knowledge. And I thought, you know, this is me. I need to do this. I need to set up a group so that everyone can have all of this knowledge for free. And that's why I started my group.
Well, and to be honest, nobody was talking about it. And as a matter of fact, when it got talk about, it was like, oh, wait, taxes? I'm not going to pay taxes, you know, because on eBay, they didn't have to pay taxes because, you know, that $20,000, mm-hmm. 200 items or whatever that
right.
rule is, wasn't there. So they never got a 1099. Majority of people never filed, right? And so now all of a sudden, they're getting these things and reality's hitting them, because if you're doing retail arb like you described in 10,000 Targets, you're getting 10,000 receipts every time
right.
you go shopping, right? I mean, all of a sudden it's overwhelming.
It is.
Very, very quickly. And so, you know, what I'd love to take this time, actually, I want to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about foundations, because to me, that's what's interesting to me. You're an expert in this stuff. You're an expert now in e-commerce, so you have the really both sides of perspective about setting up this business right from maybe not day one, but, you know, day 90. They figured out that they could buy and sell things. Okay, now they are like you saying, hey, this is a viable business. I need to put some foundational practices in place. And to me, I think that that's where you offer the most help, because you're, like I said, you know both sides of it. So let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. Today's podcast is brought to you by Seller Essentials, essential business solution for online sellers. Whether you sell general merchandise on Amazon or eBay, private label your own product, or if your focus is selling books, wholesale products, or liquidation lots, let Seller Essentials be your online resource for all things e-commerce. Essential resources, essential solutions, Seller Essentials, the internet's premier venue for online professional. Visit SellerEssentials.com. For more information, that's SellerEssentials.com.
Told you she's great. Hey, I just want to remind you about episode 100 coming up with Chris Green. I'm very excited about that. Very flattered that he's coming on. And, you know, he's got so much information. So I don't want to take anything away from Anna, but I just want to mention it again, episode 100. So in this segment, we spend the majority of the time talking about foundational accounting. What are the building blocks that you really want to put into place? Think about it. If you had any struggle last year getting your taxes done, trying to race to get everything organized, you said, hey, I'm going to get organized. This is going to be it. It's going to be June in another week. Are you organized? If you're not, she has a solution, and we spend some time talking about it. Again, plain speak accounting. Very rare to find somebody who understands the e-commerce business and can talk like that. Very cool. Let's get back into the podcast.
All right, we're back, and we're talking with Anna Hill, CPA, e-commerce seller, been selling for 3 years, so she knows what she's doing, and she's had some success. And what I like is the practical approach that Anna takes. She's very kind in her group, and we'll talk about her group in a little bit, but very kind, very understanding, and trying to not dumb it down for us, those non-CPAs like me, but bring it to terms that we would understand, and I really appreciate that. I mean that. So anyway, we are talking about foundations, and what I'd like to do is talk about just the basic blocks that somebody who's getting ready to start saying this could be a viable business, I'm going to get that magic 1099, this is going to be, I'm going to have to turn in a profit and loss statement at some point. Can you help us start? Where do they start? What's the most basic place to start?
Well, the most basic place to start is please get a separate business checking account. If you don't do anything else, do that. And a lot of banks will let you set that up online. A lot of them you have to go into the bank, and I know that's boring, but just do it, because in the end, that will save yourself so many headaches. So that's just a basic step. If you sell $100 or $100 million, just do that.
And it doesn't have to be a corporate account. It just has to be separate. It's Anna Hill Limited. Boom, there's my business, right? It's it does not have to be a corporation. And many people shouldn't be a corporation. I mean, I'm not giving advice, but it's overkill depending on what they're selling or how big they're getting. So when they start, that's the first place to do. Put all your expenses in one checking account, all your receipts into that checking account, right?
Right.
And do you advise a debit card or a credit card? I think a lot of people use credit cards to get started in this business because, let's face it, it's a cash-heavy business. You know, you're spending a lot of money very quickly, and you're not seeing a return. For most people now, it's 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. They won't see a return for the stuff that's sold. Do you advise that they start with cash or do they start with credit?
You know, that's actually a personal decision, and I am a big fan of having open, honest dialogue with your business partner about this. Your business partner could be your spouse who's in a completely unrelated field, but it's the family that's impacted, or maybe you have a business partner, an actual business partner who you're not married to but it's going in with you, or maybe it's just yourself. And I think the secret to success in this business is not having, you know, perfect books. It's having honesty and vulnerability. So if you feel like you want to finance some of this with a credit card or a loan, that's fine. Just be aware of what the financing costs are, what is the interest rate, what's the APR, all of that. Or just say, you know, I'm not comfortable with that. I'm going to start slower and I'm going to use cash. You know, this is what is the expression? Slow and steady wins the race. This is not a race. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. So take your time and do it. There is no sale that you miss today that you can't duplicate later in a financially healthy way. So that's really a personal decision.
I think this sound advice, though, is that, you know, take your time. I mean, to me, it does feel like a sprint sometimes when you see other people posting your numbers, and it gets exciting, let's face it, right? Mm-hmm. And then you're like, ooh, if he could do it, I can do it. And then you get excited. Oh, my God, his sales are so much bigger than mine. I got to get going. I got to get out there. And it can get away from you instead of paying attention. I think the really successful people have figured it out, right, whether they use credit card. Now, when they have a credit card, is it a personal credit card or is it a business credit card?
Well, I want to be real careful to not give entity structure guidance and advice.
Okay.
I think the point really is that it's important early on to have a CPA who's advising you. And you know as well as I do, it's important to find that professional that can give you guidance and explain the difference between filing your taxes using a Schedule C or an LLC or an S-Corp, and then say, if you're doing these things and you want some liability protection, this is the kind of credit card you need, and this is the name it needs to be in. So I think really early on, I don't mean day one, but like you said, I think 90 days, once you say, gosh, this is a viable business and I really want to do this, you know, just kind of put the brakes on it and say, all right, I'm going to get my ducks in a row and talk to your CPA about the different options, and then do credit card applications and financing based on that. Maybe the individual loans the business money. Maybe the individual allows the business to do certain financing so they can buy more inventory.
That's smart. And you know, I use 90 days because you might find out 6 weeks into this, I don't like it.
Right.
You know, I don't like running to the stores. I always tell the story, Andy Simmons and I, we were out doing something. He's 10 minutes and he's like, I'm bored. Let's go do something else. Well, yeah, 10 minutes. He's done. He's like, I'm tired. I'm like, dude, it was 10 minutes. He's like, I'm still tired. But it's true. And it's not that that's not the attractive part
right
to him. Right. And so finding that out early on, it's going to take you, you know, in the beginning, everybody's excited, but give it a chance. And you might find out that you might be in the accounting side of the business that, you know, so you're still in e-commerce, but you're in the accounting side, or you're in the shipping and prep, you know, hence all the prep centers, right? Mm-hmm. Most of the prep centers I talk to, they're getting out of the sales side of the business. They're now in the prep business because they like that piece of it. That takes a different approach. And so, again, give yourself that 90 days to figure out, or you might just say, this sucks, I'm going to go back and, you know, sell cars or whatever I was doing beforehand, right? Okay, so we have a checking account. And from that checking account, you could pretty much run your business, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
So you could use that to figure out your profit and loss, right? I mean, the beauty is you have money coming in and you have expenses going out.
Right.
And there at the end, there's some retained, there's some money left over, right?
Right.
That's pretty much the basis that your accountant's going to want when they get ready to start pulling together to do your taxes, right?
Exactly.
What else would be another foundation? So we have a checking account. We have a credit card, debit card, whatever it is, depending on the structure that we're not advising that. But that's something that you'd want. Again, you'd want, even if it's in a private thing, you'd still want it to be separate, right, from a tracking point of view. That's
right.
Where I was going. It was just from
exactly.
A tracking point of view,
right.
not a, you know, pierce the veil kind of thing. Just a,
exactly.
Hey, this credit card, all these purchases represent this. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
What would you say would be the next foundational thing?
Well, I think the next foundational thing, and this is something that people really struggle with, is remembering we actually have two accounting responsibilities. One is to the government, and that is to do an annual tax return. But the other one that I feel is more important is to ourselves. And it is crucial that we understand our accounting books and records on something less than a yearly basis. I think ideally is monthly, but at least quarterly, have a balance sheet and income statement. And I don't want to get too far ahead because we're talking about building blocks, but I think the ultimate goal for every single seller is to have full set of monthly financials. And Stephen, you can probably support me on this, that that's a reasonable goal to grow and manage a business.
Well, if it doesn't get measured, it doesn't get counted, right? So
right.
So you really do need to know, you know, I love a budget. I'm a budget guy. That's what I do mostly. And managerial accounting. Well, that's what my world has become, building models and doing budgeting almost every month in corporate America. We do new budgets all the time. I'm doing one today, as a matter of fact, the new best estimate, they call them now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're forever modeling. You're forever figuring it out. The beauty is you get really good at it. So when somebody's like, hey, can you figure this out? Yep. Take me about 10 seconds. I can do it. Boom, 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 boom. Because you get to the point where you can do it in your head, right?
Right.
The beauty of this business is if you have revenue targets, they're great. Profit targets are better because, quite frankly, that's what pays your bills, really,
right.
Is your profit. Having revenue is good, but knowing what your average sale and your average cost and how much money you want to make, there's just a couple little – if I asked you about six or seven trigger points, I could tell you how much you need to buy, how much you need to sell, how many, you know, we could get through your turn ratios, all those things. And that's where a good set of financial statements will get you. Mm-hmm. And then when you use them effectively, you can really start to make smarter decisions. Again, you know, if you're selling $70 items and you're making 20%, that's great. If you're selling $30 items and you're making 40%, is that as great? Probably not, but you need to do that math, right? And you need to go through that. The only way you're going to do that is if you know your numbers. Mm-hmm. And so you're saying some kind of bookkeeping. Now, it doesn't need to be QuickBooks, which I know is your favorite.
Well, actually, I just want to clarify, that's not my favorite. That is what I have found works for many e-commerce sellers, but there are a lot of options out there, and I try not to encourage people to choose what I think is a good solution for many. I encourage them to look at all of the options and maybe watch a YouTube video or two, post in my group, hey, who likes this or who likes that, and then make a decision. So I just want
to. Because it's complex, right? I mean, some of these things get very complex. I mean, there are companies, mega companies using QuickBooks or FreshBooks or Quicken. I mean, there's a myriad of different companies. And then there's all free ones out there, too. Mm-hmm. And again, you can even do it in Excel if you chose to, right?
Exactly.
You know, back a little older than you, but not that much. But I remember doing it by hand. You know, our general ledger was a big binder. Literally, you dump it in the center of your desk, and I could never get that darn thing to balance. But they had it. I mean, make the entries by hand and had true set of books. When they talk about books, that's what they meant. And I remember doing that a long time ago. Okay, so we've moved now into. I think you're absolutely right. You want to get to the point where you're getting a set of financials. And the beauty is you can start with that first year's tax return, right? Because that's going to have a balance sheet and income statement. That'll give you a place to start if that's where you have to start.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Then you can start keeping it because, correct me if I'm wrong, at most accounting systems, if you don't use it to write checks, it's really just an electronic accounting system where you're just putting in the checks that you wrote and the receipts that you got and some details behind it. And the degree of details you put in, it's subjective in some ways because it's not required. But if you really want to get to that place of really great books, the more you put in, the better it is. But it's really not very hard, any of them. The free ones that are out there, they're really not that hard. And once you get good at it, because I think about it in our own business, I don't think we write more than, you know, 6 checks a month. Mm-hmm. Almost everything's electronic for us. So that's a hassle. Let's talk receipts. They're easy, right? There's not very many and it's simple to keep them.
Right.
Yeah, right. You know, I had a great interview with Max Abreu and we were talking about scanners because they've scaled up to a very large company now and they are trying 3 different scanners to try to figure out what's the best one to keep the hundreds and hundreds and thousands of receipts they get. Mm-hmm. What's your experience with that?
Well, here's what I always tell people. I consider the transaction in your bank or credit card, the transaction of original entry into your accounting records. The receipt is the support for that. And I'm sure that makes a lot of sense to you if, you know, you're thinking about the world of accounting. But essentially what happens is if you use, and I'm just going to say QuickBooks for shorthand for whatever software you use. But if you're using an accounting system like QuickBooks, you import your transactions. So they come in on a transaction by transaction basis. They do not come in on an inventory item by inventory basis. So let's say you're at Target and you spend $200. That could be 11 items. And the receipt is what provides the detail and you want to keep the receipt. But what goes into your accounting records is that one Target transaction. So here's what I do. I import all of my transactions from my checking account. And let's say at the end of the month, I have 40 transactions. I have all of my receipts and I count them. If I have 40 receipts, then I know I have support for every single one of those transactions. So as I start to categorize those transactions and I tell the software, this is for inventory, this is for shipping supplies, this is for this and that, then I can refer to my receipt if I need details. So if I have one transaction for $30 and let's say it's 20 for inventory and 10 for shipping supplies, I need to know that from the receipt. But I think where people get really frustrated, which is understandable, is thinking, oh my gosh, I have to take this mountain of receipts and get it into my accounting software. I don't know what to do. It's so hard and boring, and I'm just not going to do it. And what I encourage people to do instead is step back and take a big picture view. It's that building block you're talking about, and say, what do I need to get into my accounting records? I need to have the expenditures in. I need my receipts to support, but I'm not digging through a mountain of receipts to figure out what I've got to put into my software.
So let's just take that and break it down a little further, a little deeper. So in this example you said, right, so you were using Target. Majority of people are going to buy some office supplies or shipping supplies or whatever, but they're not going to be buying it at every time they go out.
Right.
So what's going to happen? They're going to happen once or twice or three times a month. Generally, most of your purchases are going to be inventory, and you're going to put it in that towards that cost of goods. And so those are very simple, as you're saying. It's one entry, $300, boom, it goes in.
Right.
Right. And so when you're saying it that way, it really is very simple. That little bit of categorizing is really a little bit. If you get it perspectively, as you're saying, you're putting in the $200, you're putting $200, boom, 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 you're done.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait, I now have to go back and fix these two or three other ones because this is in all inventory. These are okay. And I think when you break it down, and so, you know, decent accountants are going to tell you, you got to break it down to practice. So you're going to separate the ones that you have to do special, right?
Right.
And you don't build your process for the exceptions. You build your process for the majority.
Yes,
so
exactly.
The majority is data entry is 98% of my transactions are just standard.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you – boom, and you could key it in. Boom, 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 you're done. Then you spend time on that 2%. That's what takes the little bit of effort. Once they're done, boom, you're done. Now, how do you store your receipts? Let's go back to foundation. So we're not really big and we don't have a big fancy department. Starting out, we used to store them in envelopes. What would you recommend?
Well, you know, envelopes are perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with keeping it simple. I know one seller who I work with regularly, and she is the most organized seller. She sold almost $1 million last year. And you know what she does? She takes the receipts and tapes them on a piece of paper and runs them through the copier. Because you know how those thermal receipts will fade over time?
Mm-hmm.
And then she saves the PDF of what she ran through the copier. That wouldn't work for everyone, but it really can be that simple. You don't have to have this $1 billion scanner and this and that. I'll tell you what I do. I have a 15-year-old son, and he's an excellent scanner, and it's part of his chores. So once I get through the month and I say, okay, I should have 40 receipts. Oh, look, I have 40. I have him scan them, and he saves them to Dropbox.
Well, let's take it a step further because you're going deeper. So you're a little more advanced. Is he saving them by store and date? Are you allowed to code the whatever software you're using?
Well, there are two options, and I think the simplest is Dropbox, where you literally take a scan and you turn it into a PDF, and it just is saved.
You save it by name, right? Are you saving it Walmart, September 2000?
Only date. And the reason is because if I look at the bank statement and the date is February 12th and I have one receipt from February 12th, then I can look at the receipt and say, oh, that was Walmart. So
walk me through that. I'm going to go deeper because I really want to get this because I think this is going to be a pivotal point for people. This is a place where so many people get hung up. It really is, and it's so important. So what you're describing, so are you typing in the word February or are you putting 02?
I put 02. Because it will stack the saved files chronologically.
Okay.
So if you had, let's say you only had two receipts, 02.01, February 1st, and 02.15, February 15th, then the first receipt is first, and the last receipt is last. It's important to be consistent. It doesn't matter.
And it'll be alphanumeric. So you're saying you're doing 02.02. .16?
Right.
Okay, because it won't recognize hyphens and things like that, but it'll recognize a period.
Exactly.
And so as long as you have that standard naming convention and you're consistent with that, you can go back. And so you're filing – are you then filing them by year or by month out on Dropbox?
I have a master folder by year, so 2016, and within that I have months. Within the month, that's – all I do. I don't have then with by store and item. And I think you're right. That's where people get bogged down. It almost becomes analysis paralysis. But I always tell people, create a system that works for you. Don't create a system that you think you should have. So if you know you have a bank statement that tells you all of the February transactions, and you have things saved in Dropbox by date, well, then you can match the date to the transaction on the bank statement and then look at the detail. Don't go crazy.
Well, let me ask you this, because this is a real life scenario that's happening more and more. You're selling Nikes and you bought them on February 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know when they say, okay, Anna, I need you to authenticate and show me the receipt that you bought these? What's your process in the process that you're describing?
Well, I think you have to think about it, and that's a really good question, in a big picture way. So we are doing two different things. Number one is getting entries into your accounting system. But the second thing that you're doing is creating shipments, and the shipments are what you need to have to get items into Amazon. So separate those two things out. And I am by no means an expert on creating shipments and documenting all of that. Mm-hmm. But I do know from people who are successful sellers, Marshall's is a store that's famous for not having SKUs on the receipt that matches the item. I know sellers who actually take pictures of the shipment with the receipt. And that's something that's a whole different world, separate from the accounting records. It doesn't mean that it's not important, but I think you have to think about the process as two different things. One process is having accurate accounting records, and the second process is being able to answer questions from Amazon.
And, you know, or managing your inventory, in essence, right? Right. And so, like, you could use an inventory lab or a scan power,
right,
where you can track that data.
Exactly.
Right?
And those two products are really inventory subledgers where they keep track of all of those details. And what you and I were talking about was inventory on a very high level, where it's not on an item by item basis, it's on a transaction basis. So you're talking about, I spent $100 at Target, and you're not focusing at that point in your workflow on what you got for $100. You're saying, I increased my inventory by $100. Here's the receipt. Later on, you will say, here's the receipt. What are the details?
Okay. Okay. Now, I understand there are a couple things that you can do, right? So some of the scanning software that's out there, and they're very inexpensive. Some of them mm-hmm. are a few hundred dollars and some are even more. But some of them allow you to put fields like keywords that we're all using, right?
Right.
It does allow you to put in a Walmart net. But then, you know, it gets to be your job becomes being a scanner, you know, and that,
right.
that takes away some fun. So I think the few times that it's important to come up with this stuff, I think your point is very clear. Don't use your accounting records to do that, because it really doesn't help you in any way, right?
Right.
You got to go find that receipt, and putting the two together is overkill. Having that detailed level accounting in QuickBooks or whatever you're using doesn't help you. Really, it doesn't, right? It is going to help
I
you
agree.
Run a better business. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. All right. I like that. And I think that's a smart foundational thing. I like your naming convention. I think that's very simple, very easy to do. And basically, so if you've used an inventory lab or a scan power, you could quickly say, okay, Nikes, oh, there they are, because it'll match. And that'll mm-hmm. tell you the date you purchased it, because you're putting that information in. And then you just go to your receipt and boom. Now, you're destroying the paper receipts after you scan them in and get them saved and the image is correct. Is that correct?
No, I don't. I need my
Okay,
Libby.
You can.
I need paper.
Right?
You well, ask your CPA.
Okay.
And the reason I'm saying that, and this isn't like a scary thing, but when I worked in my days of working on IRS tax disputes, some of these IRS auditors are very old school, and they just wanted to see the piece of paper. They didn't want to see the scan. They didn't want to see a PDF. So, you know, maybe I'm jaded by my experience, but Stephen, I literally stick them in a folder and I just don't think about it again.
Okay.
I have room
so
for
you
that.
Could, if you had to, you could, in theory, go find them.
Absolutely. And that's
okay.
probably never going to happen. But I just wanted to be, you know, own my neuroses and tell you that.
Well, and what you're describing is pretty good, because if you're using your son, right, and that's your process,
right. yeah.
and he's scanning him in, he's throwing you in a box labeled 2016, knowing you, probably in a folder or an envelope that gets filed.
That's where I stop.
Okay. All right. But that makes sense. So you have a box and that stays with you until whenever you can get rid of those, you know, depending. And I tell this story. This is true, and I'm in a publicly traded company where I work. We just had a sales tax audit that went back 30 years.
Oh,
and they would contact me like, okay, Steve, could you find the records from 19? No, no, they're gone. I'm not going looking for it. They're gone, you know. And so they went back 30 years to do the sales tax audit. And it's like, oh, my goodness. So true story.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so we now have our records scanned, right, where our receipts are scanned. They are transactions. I like the way you describe that. They're in. So you've got that checkbook kind of up to date, right?
Yeah,
checkbook
exactly.
Slash. So you now know what your expenses, well, where your money was spent. That's not necessarily expenses.
Right.
What's next? I mean, you know, what about, can I use a cash accounting? And I know you're not going to give us advice, and I know you can do both, and you have to talk to your CPA, but there are cash systems. And I see one of the places that people get hung up, hey, look, I took in $100,000, but I spent $100,000. I didn't make any money. They don't talk about that they have a balance of inventory somewhere, right? They just say, oh, I must have made nothing. Is that correct?
Well, I think that's such a good point. And I get a lot of private messages from people who are really upset because they say, my sales are going up and I can't pay myself and I can't pay my bills and I don't know what's happened. And I think that's kind of the black hole of this business. And what you said is exactly right. I highly recommend for every single one of us, once a month, know the balance of your unsold inventory, because that's the key. That's the secret. Because what happens is people get payouts and they get very excited about buying more inventory. But if you buy more inventory and it's not selling, then you can't pay yourself and you can't pay your bills. So sales still might be increasing, but they're not incrementally increasing by what you're spending on inventory. And I hope you can say that a little bit better than I just did. But
I think you're right. I mean, one of the better interviews was Kristen Ostrander, where her and her mom had a business, and she said that they put X percent aside every single paycheck, period. Mm-hmm. That was the way they designed their business. They set it up. That's their foundation. So they always know when they want to make, when they want to give themselves a raise, they've got to work a little harder.
Right.
And so right from day one, if they weren't making money, they knew it because they weren't getting their paycheck. I mean, it was right up front. And
right.
I think that's another place where a lot of people, you know, let's face it, right? Most people have a job and they're starting this and they're like, hey, this is great. You know, unfortunately, many of them borrow money. They get started. They have some very easy success. I always say, you know, end cap clearance stuff from Target, which I think people have to do because it's a foundation thing. You'll learn.
Right.
And it's very easy. And then all of a sudden, the rest of the Target sellers or discounts across the country and their stuff starts waning. And they're like, oh, my God, you mean I'm not going to get paid $69 for this Elsa doll anymore? Right. You know, it's not going to. You're right. It's not going to happen. It's not. You still have those. Anyway, I still have some. I do. I still have a ton of, but I did buy Anna dolls at $2. I'm very pleased that I did it way back in the day. And then all of a sudden they got hot and it was finally got hot and boom. So you know, you didn't build in enough. You know, the other thing I would say too is I see a lot and I'm making $80,000. I need to make $80,000 in this business. How quickly can I make my $80,000? You're not going to make $80,000. That's what I tell people. You're not going to make it. It was starting out in this business. If you think you're going to, you're going to fail and just, you know, and you're going to be disappointed because, again, how much do you have to sell to make $80,000, Anna?
Right.
Do you have that answer?
Well, I mean, it's kind of a generalization. You could use the times three rule of thumb, or you could, you know, say maybe I got all the inventory free. That's a tough question to answer, but you have to have a lot of inventory to sell $80,000.
Well, to net $80,000, right?
Well, what's the net? Yeah.
I mean, it really – it isn't that easy. And again, if you don't know these numbers, if you can't do inventory turns, if you can't do all those different calculations, which most people can't and probably shouldn't get that great at it, but if they did a set of financials and they said, hey, I made $1,000 last month and the month before that I made $800 and before that – you know, and they see a trend, you can see what's working. And I think that that's what it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other thing is when you know what inventory's left, you start to learn what not to buy because you finally start to realize what's not selling, right?
Right. Yes.
Okay. So give me some more foundational things that you think that most basic sellers would need. So we got a checking account, right? We have a credit card, debit card, or whatever, hopefully in whatever business entity they decide, whatever that means. They've now done some financial statements, hopefully monthly is what your recommendation is. They realize they have an ending inventory value, and they got to really keep an eye on that. Where else should they be thinking about? And they have some kind of bookkeeping system. If they have, if they're doing financial statements monthly, they probably have some type of bookkeeping system. What about payroll and things like that? Do you do your own payroll or do you outsource that?
I'm a big fan of outsourcing that. I think it's tedious and kind of tricky, and it's really not that expensive to have a company do it for you. You know, you can go in my group and just ask. I don't have a particular company that I advocate using, but you can go in there and ask. I think it's really important. I think there's this bizarre badge of honor in this community. I didn't pay myself for 18 months, and I think, why would you do that? How is that a positive, healthy thing?
You're a volunteer.
Right. But have you noticed that? It's not seeing this, and that's not good. That doesn't mean it's not honorable, and that doesn't – it's almost like – you know, I think back when I was in high school and girls were like, I only ate 100 calories for the whole week. Well, yay, but you're going to starve and that's not healthy. Yeah. So I really encourage people to have a little bit of balance. And one of the reasons that I love when people have their books in order isn't just because I think it's important. I want people to celebrate their success. And my biggest joy is when I assist someone, you know, getting all the parts and pieces working and they say, oh my gosh, I'm doing better than I ever thought. And I think that's awesome. I wish you had known that as you went along, because then you could really feel good. It's almost like, again, dieting. If you don't get on the scale to see the victories, then what's the point?
Right,
monitor and know how you're doing. And it's very exciting. This business has so many opportunities, and it doesn't take a lot to really understand and measure how you're doing. Just start where you are. Don't say, I have to have it the perfect way or else. Just start where you are. Figure out where you want to go and evolve from there step at a time.
I love what you said. So it's basically, you know, the big haul, those are thrilling, but that gets old after a while, because guess what? Every store I go to, I can find a big haul, right?
Right.
I'm sure you're at the same. Most people get there and you're like, I have more opportunity. How many times do you see this? More opportunities to buy than I have money, right?
Yes.
Almost everybody gets to that place. Okay. So that means that is no big deal, right?
Right.
But making X amount of dollars and then all of a sudden making X plus and X plus plus, that's very encouraging. And I like what you're saying. So basically that's your pat on the back, right? Daniel Lappin would say when they, you know, your ultimate clapping is when they give you dollar bills, right? So that's the clap that you get. That's the applause when you actually turn a profit and you can see it. And as you say, each month, you set a little bit of goal to get a little bit better, a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's so smart. So you have a group called Accounting We Will Go.
Yes.
We will go. We will go. Right. And so it's a free group, correct?
Yes. It is free.
However, they need to be real, right? They have to get in. They have to request to get in.
Yeah.
And that way you can make the people are real. We have well over 4,000 members. Isn't that incredible?
I'm so surprised. I started it in early 2015, and I thought, wow, will I get 100 people? And now I think I have like 4,100, almost.
4,198. I'm looking at it right now. 4,100. That's crazy.
I'm really
You got
proud.
A lot of good stuff. That's it is humbling, but you know what? Again, that foundational stuff, the conversations, I see sometimes they get a little deep, because once in a while you start doing some accounting entries showing how to do cost of goods and stuff that probably gloss over a lot of people's heads. But when they sit back and think about it, oh, okay, this is pretty basic stuff, right? You're making it beginning plus purchases. Here's your ending and there's your cost of goods, right? And I think that stuff, seeing it and then seeing somebody else get it and somebody else get it really helps people, you know, just get better at what they're doing. And I mean, it's a who's who in your group. You don't have just new sellers. You've got a lot of very seasoned sellers, and some that are doing some pretty sophisticated stuff, and some that are just getting started. And I think that that's the beauty of it, because every single person in this group, I don't care what they're using, had to start.
Yes.
And so they all have that experience. And I just think that's so great. Now, I noticed lately you also took on this little discussion about this book that's out there about putting money aside, right? I'm forgetting the name of the book. Help me out.
Well, the book is called Profit First, and I think it actually goes back to what you and I were discussing. It is not a badge of honor to not pay yourself unless that's your strategy. If that's your strategy, that's great. But I'm all about intention. And this circles back to what we were originally talking about. Have a discussion with yourself or your spouse or your business partner. What are your goals? If your goals are to pay yourself, then pay yourself. You know, you don't have to prove that your business is successful because every single penny goes back into inventory. Or maybe you define success because every penny goes back into inventory. And I think making sure that you have predefined plans about how you want to spend your proceeds and how you want to plan for them is really important.
Hmm. I love it, because what works for me doesn't necessarily work for you. Right. And it doesn't have to. And that's the beauty of this, because as you can set it up the way you want, and you can have the freedom that you want, kind of all the way back to what you were talking about when the lights went on for you, is when you found that freedom in mm-hmm. that first business venture. This is the same type. And if you feel like you have to have these really fancy books and keep up with all this data, for what purpose? You know, what does that mean, right? I mean, you really don't need it unless that's your intention, unless you want to have that kind of business. I love it, love it, love it. Okay, so I'm sure we're boring a whole bunch of people, but, you know, this is the kind of thing that I think a lot of people, well, let me say this. There are 4,198 people who do care because they joined your group. And to me, that's very cool, because my bet is many of them are much further along in their business because they're paying attention to this stuff. And so, mm-hmm. you know, kudos to you for putting yourself out there. How much do you charge for the group?
Oh, it's free.
It's free. You charge
nothing. And it
will
always be free. This is my way to give back to the community that has been so supportive of me. And I have learned more from my group than I could ever think about giving. I will never charge. It's always free.
Well, now, I saw somebody ask you the other day, hey, can I get in and will you do my taxes for me? Will you be my bookkeeper? Will you do? And the answer is no, right? That's not what you do.
Right.
However, you do have a boot camp. So tell us about what that means. All right. So I can get in here for free. So you don't have to pitch this, right? I can get in here for free. And if I do the work, I can pretty much found, it looks like most of the answers that I want. It looks, I can, if I do the work. But if I don't want to do the work and I want to do a little time management, my time is too valuable, I can't give it the effort, I need to jump ahead. Is that what your boot camp will do?
That's exactly what the boot camp is. And it's funny, the boot camp actually was born from people saying, please, I don't want to dig through posts. Just, you know, shortcut this for me. June is a great time because there's no Q4, taxes are done. It's a wonderful time to get good processes in order. And I always tell people everything is free that you need to know in the group. But if you want to shortcut that process, or you want someone to hold your hand, or you want to be in a group where there's accountability and you can work with other people, then that's for you. It's not for everybody, but for those who that appeals to, that's certainly an option.
Okay, so let's talk about what it is. Okay, so it says that it's a 21-day accounting boot camp, live Zoom sessions presented 3 times a week and available on replay. So if I can't make them, I can still go see them. It's a private Facebook group where you're going to cover some pretty interesting topics. Just pick out one or two, if you would.
Well, my favorite topic is the difference between the balance sheet and the income statement and why you need both. And I think people know the income statement from the tax return. And then there's this mystery. What is the balance sheet? I don't know what that is. And as you know, that's all about how much do you have in checking, how much do you have in unsold inventory.
It's the health of your business, right?
Exactly.
It's the health.
Right. Do you owe more than your business is worth? Or it's like a home. Is your mortgage higher than your home? Or is your home worth more than your mortgage? The only thing the income statement tells you is, can you pay your bills? And that's important. But the balance sheet to me is where it's at. And I really want people to understand what that is and why you should evolve, or you should consider evolving past just knowing the income statement. So that to me is really exciting. And then what I want to do is help people say, I have a receipt. How do I go from that to actual financial statements. And so I'm going to walk people through the process, like literally hold up a receipt, show them how to scan it, show them how to enter it into Dropbox. So it's kind of a, I guess, a 101. But on the other hand, there's some more advanced topics that I'll be talking about, which are
gift cards, accounting for gift cards. That's pretty complex stuff. That's not as easy as, you know, oh, you just put that in. No. There's some complexity to that.
There is. And I have a method that I've developed that makes it a little bit more straightforward. But a lot of people want to do it differently. But gift cards sometimes are the way that people make money. I know, gosh, I probably know a huge handful of sellers, and that's their margin is gift cards. So they're buying things that I might pass on or you might pass on, but with their gift cards and how they've leveraged points, that's a deal. So I want to talk about that also. And not every single session will apply to everyone, but this is about exposing sellers to all of the different options out there, and then they can kind of tailor and refine to what suits them.
Well, I think, you know, and this is a valid, this is a great point to say this. Not all CPAs understand e-commerce accounting, okay? Just because you're a CPA doesn't mean you understand e-commerce accounting. You understand accounting, of course. But this business is a little bit different. And it's just like the guys that specialize in construction accounting or government accounting. I mean, they are different, right? They are – it's that tax guy that doesn't do payroll, right?
Right.
There are differences. And so finding somebody who understands it, it's – I know it's more prevalent now. My CPA has two, me and another person, that are e-commerce sellers. That's it. And we've been there for a few years. But he – It's just interesting. He learns how to do his, you know, his e-commerce stuff, quite frankly, from us, because he's like, well, what is this? You know, trying to understand it. So to find somebody who's been selling is very rare. And I think that that's a real advantage that you have, because you know gift cards are the margin. Most people wouldn't get that, right? The fact that you understand that is a big deal. And so I think it's a great thing. It's $299. That's it.
Right.
So it's $299. And that's what you get in 21 days. Would you say a seller that especially has struggled with their books this past year to get their taxes done and stuff, and they're saying, you know, this is the year I want to turn it and get it right. This is the year. The fact that it's June, is it too late in the year to start for 2016 to get my books right?
Well, no, because they're actually getting a six-month head start on the tax deadline for next year.
Okay.
It's coming.
But the fact that I didn't start in January, is it too late?
It's never too late. And you know what? What's really cool about a tax return is it's a point, like a line in the sand. Then you build your records from that point forward. So, yes, you've lost a few months in this year, but it's not a big deal. You just build from December 31st and you go forward. You are going to have to do the tax return for next year, well, for 2016 and 2017. And that's why I encourage people now. You know, things are a little bit slower. You may not be sourcing for holidays. Take advantage of the downtime in summer and get your books in order and really think about what your plan is. Don't have a three-ring circus and a fire drill next year, because you know what they say, if nothing changes, nothing changes.
Now, and getting it put together now, check off your bucket list. This is one of those things that you got to sit back and say, oh, you know, I really want to get this done. All right, how many people are doing that, right?
Right.
Saying that. How many people are doing it is a big difference. This is an opportunity. And you say in 21 days, I should be able to understand how to put together some decent financial statements based on this, right, with what you include here, how to handle the receipts, accounting basics, how to handle cost of goods sold, which is the complex thing for most people.
Mm-hmm.
I love the gift card thing again, because that's a little bit deeper, but it's so prevalent.
Right.
And I'm assuming it's going to even become more prevalent out there as more people get into it. So,
I think so too.
Opens June 1st, right? So there's still time to join?
There's plenty of time to join. The first session is going to be June 6th. And what's really cool is I'm going to have – I know no one needs another Facebook group, but I'm going to have a separate Facebook group for it, and I'm going to ask people to choose accountability partners. I have an accountability partner outside of the Amazon selling business, and it has been one of my factors of success. And so I'm going to ask people if they want to have accountability partners to do that, so they have someone they can check in with. And it doesn't mean sharing details about sales. It means setting goals like, hey, I wanted to have a software chosen by August 1st, and I didn't do it, and here's what happened. Or I did it, and here's what I'm excited about. So I really want people to partner and help each other.
These fees that people pay. These are all tax deduct. Not that we're giving tax advice, but these are legitimate business costs that people need to understand. Yeah, that's right. And so when you have a business, you're going to have this investment. And the fact that you don't have to go to a seminar and sit in a room or fly somewhere and travel to me is very attractive because you don't need to. You want to see your stuff and you can do it right from your house. I love it. I think it's a great idea. It's long overdue. You know, I think about how many years I've been selling and nobody is doing this. So it's just terrific. And I'm excited for people because, again, go join Anna's group, you know, and I'll have a link. Go join her group and you'll see how plain speaking, that's not a criticism, but it's making it understandable in terms that we can understand the regular seller. I think that's, you know, instead of, well, you know, if you take this, the liabilities go, you know, and all that, you know, pontificating, trying to sound important. That's great, but it doesn't help the regular people. Okay. So I'm excited. I'm excited for you because I really think that you're going to have a great turnout and I think people need it. So, okay. So the goal of this podcast is to help people move forward. So I think we've done a pretty good job of giving people tips and tricks. Could you give us one more that you think that maybe we didn't touch on that you think somebody can put into their business to get them moving forward past stuck?
You know, I tell people all the time, please message me. I'm happy to talk to you. No charge. Send me a message. We'll set up screen sharing and we'll do a phone call. There are a lot of accounting struggles that are really easy to overcome. Don't feel that there's not help. Just send me a message. I'm always here. You can ask so many people. I'm happy to talk to you on the phone or, you know, whatever it takes to overcome the hurdle, I'll tag you and post. A lot of people feel uncomfortable posting questions in the group because they feel like
They think they look stupid. Yeah. Oh, and right. So everybody knows that.
I searched the group and I didn't find this. I'm so sorry, but, and don't feel like that. Of course, please look first, but if you can't find it, that's okay. Send me a message or post in the group. I'm here. I'm here to help. And I think our community is so incredible, and I just feel lucky to be a part of it.
Well, I think they're lucky to have you. So I'm going to have a link to your group. I'll have a link for your class, and I'll have a link for your Facebook account. Any other ways that people can get in touch with you, or is that just the best way, what I just described?
That's fine. They can send me a private message, however, you know, but I'm always available in the group. Either way is fine.
Oh, man. I appreciate you taking the time. This is great stuff. It's June 1st is her class. June 1st, the Facebook group opens, and June 6th is your first class. But again, if they missed it, it's going to be recorded, right?
Exactly.
And so, if this is the year, I'm sure last year, especially, you know, January, or right after the year, you're like, I got to get this stuff done. This is going to be the year I get it done. This is your chance to get it done and, you know, take your business and make it a real business. Now is the time. If you're having success and you're thinking about it, now is the time, and here's a great opportunity for $300. You're going to find out here's how you can do it. Here's a real visual how you can do it. That's very rare. Most of them charge $300 an hour, so good luck with that. it's true, right? I mean, it is.
Yes.
Yeah, it is true. That scares people, but, you know, there are some lawyers we pay $600 an hour. So this is to be able to get this in 21 days, I just think is terrific. So I appreciate you taking the time. I wish you nothing but success, and I can't wait to see what's happening next in the group. Take care.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
You got to love it. I mean, she's great. And, you know, again, her class, $299, and you could turn your business. You can knock one thing off the list that you knew you wanted to get done. This is the chance. Great, great story. So, again, episode 100 is coming up. Just a couple away, and Chris says he's going to drop something. I don't know what that means, but I'll be interested to find out. Appreciate it. ecommercemomentum.com. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.